Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in 112 countries over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the richest nation on earth right after this. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. They say, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation, and now in place of just weights and balances. These two presidents introduced into our current practice, our economic practice, the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they've given us a system of Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach here in our business school, conducted twice a year here at the law school. And if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, the business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just send us an email and request that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, now last time we were talking about the retirement income. If you retired in the year 2000 on $1 million, how much would you have at the end of 2011? In 11 years, what would you have? And the answer is, you'd have about one-third left. Now, that's one-third in purchasing power. In real dollars, what we call nominal dollars, you'd have 1.8 million of them. Now, if you take a look back, some of you, you know, 30, 40 years old, you can remember when prices were lower than they are today. See, if you're a person that's under 30 years old, you're in your 20s, you probably don't have a recollection of prices in years past. Most people don't. And that's the trick that government has used. Yes, government and business, along with banking, have used to deceive and rob you. It's called inflation. There isn't one person in 10, probably closer to 1 in 100, that can identify the problem with inflation. Most people will say, well, it's rising prices. That's no problem. The hell's the problem with a rising price? The problem with inflation is the loss of purchasing power over time. And the purchasing power, for instance, when I was a kid, I could take a nickel, and buy an ice cream cone. Today I was in the store. It was in TCBY. It's $2.35 for two scoops. When I was a kid, two scoops cost a dime. 10 cents, twice as much, two scoops. Now, that's a pretty significant change. $2.35, that's two scoops, versus 10 cents. That's 23 and a half times more money today than it was back in 1945. Now, let's take a look at wages. In 1945, my granddad was making $1.75 an hour. Today, you should be making $17.50 an hour. So let's take $17.50 and let's divide that by 1.75. And that's 10 times. 10 times. Your wages have gone up 10 times what they were back in 1945. But the price of an ice cream cone has gone up 23 and a half times. Your standard of living has gone down by more than 50%. Now, I've mentioned this a time or two to you people here on the air, that my dad, in 1955, just working by himself. My mom didn't have to work. She was a homemaker. And he could buy a brand new 1955 Chevrolet automobile, pay cash money for it. Now, just think about this. When was the last time you heard of anybody buying a brand new car in the last 10 years paying cash for it? I mean, that's a pretty rare event. Today, mom and dad are both working. More than 50% of the females in America are in the workplace. Mom and dad are both working, and they cannot provide the same income, the same standard of living that way my dad could by himself in 1955. And that ice cream cone there is just the example. And that's what's happening to you with your retirement income, and I've reported that to you in the last program. Now we're going to take a look at houses, because in America, we believe in houses. We believe in the American dream. And here's what it is for all you people around the world. Here's the American dream. We're taught this in school. You want to leave the farm, come to the city, and get a job so that you can buy a house in the suburbs so that you can live and commute from your house in the suburbs to your work and come back home. You want to own your own home in the suburbs. How big is this home in the suburbs? It's a lot of about 7,000 square feet. 7,000 square feet. How much of an acre is that? 43,560 divided by 7,000. And that tells us it's about one-sixth of an acre. One-sixth of an acre. So we want a sixth of an acre of ground with a house on it, and then we want a mortgage on this house, don't we? Everybody wants a mortgage. You want to pay as little down as possible. In fact, here in America, over the past 5 years, we got down to zero down. No money down. And you could get an adjustable rate mortgage so that you could choose the payment plan that would fit your budget. We sold a lot of houses. It's called toxic waste today. The housing bubble, it grew and grew and grew. Then it popped in August of 2007, I guess, is when the economic bubble popped. About June of 2005, as I recall, is when the housing bubble peaked. That was the optimum time to be selling, because that was the top of the market. Now, Americans believe that they're making a profit off of their houses. And so people, they'll buy a house. Let me read you the story. Here's the way it comes out from the International Forecaster. And Bob Chapman says, now let's take an example of what happens to the most valuable asset of most Americans. It's their home. So assume that you bought a house for cash in the beginning of the year 2000 for $500,000, and that its value peaked in the end of 2006 at exactly $1 million. That's a very generous doubling in value for one of the hotter areas. And the assumptions about inflation are the same as in our first example. So let's take the end of 2006. You've made a nice 10.4% annual return on your investment. That kept you just ahead of inflation for the same period. Now, there's only one problem. The value of a $1 million house is based on a real estate bubble propagated by rampant fraud and speculation. Now, watch what happens to your position as the real estate speculation that has been driving the markets unwinds and the Fed's policies send us into hyperinflation. Note that up until the time the value of your home had peaked, all you have managed to do is maintain the buying power of your home's dollar value. So you've made no profit, but you haven't lost any purchasing power. That's because you bought it for $500,000, and now you sold it for $1,000,000. So you've doubled your money in a 5-year period or 6-year period of time, and because of that, you've held your own. That's a good investment. You haven't made anything, but you didn't lose anything. Well, now, because we were in one of the hotter areas, you get a 40% haircut by the time the market bottoms at the end of 2011. That's right. When the price of your house goes down by 40%, which is what it's targeted to be, where will you be then? Well, in nominal dollars, your house is worth $600,000. So it looks like you're still ahead, right? Well, wrong. You see, you bought it for $500,000, and then 11 years later, you got $600,000. And most people would sit there and say, well, I made $100,000. Well, you did. In nominal dollars, you made $100,000. Now, today, going back to our ice cream comp, when we compare the price of a double dip ice cream, $2.35 at TCBY, that's what I paid the other day, I was my granddad. Now, in 1945, when the same quantity of ice cream, 2 scoops, was 10 cents, he was making $1.75 an hour. Now, today, he's making $17.50. That's the national average, or $17.58 or something on that order. How much have I lost in the process? Well, his wages went up by 10 times, but the price of the ice cream went up 23 times. To give you an example, my granddad has to be making $23.50, and he's not making $23.50. Now, if we extrapolated that out, he was making $1.75 times 23.5. He needs to be making $41 an hour, but he's not making $41 an hour. He's only making $17. You see what happens here? Yeah, our wages doubled, but the price of the product went up more than that. And so our purchasing power goes down. In another way of wording this, let's try it this way. For $1.75, my granddad worked for 1 hour. All we need to do is divide that by 0.10, and he could have bought 17.5 ice cream cones for 1 hour's work. Write that down. Put that on your paper here, children. 1945, my granddad works 1 hour. That's worth 17.5 ice cream cones, double-deckers. Today, he gets $17.58, I think is the correct numbers, but 17.58 in here. And let's divide that by $2.35. Today, he can get 7.4 ice cream cones, so he's lost 10 ice cream cones in purchasing power. Can you follow that? God, he's making tons of money, $17 an hour. But he can only buy 7 ice cream cones. When he was making $1.75, he could buy 17 ice cream cones. Now, when was this guy better off? He was better off in 1945, working for $1.75, when he had silver coin in circulation, when we didn't have this rampant hyperinflation. Now, the inflation has already taken place. I'm not telling you that your dollar is losing value and that it's going to become more valueless. That was a warning that we received when I was a kid, 50 years ago, 60 years ago. No, it's already lost its value. Compared to 1930, the dollar now is worth 2 cents compared to 1930. You're not arguing over the loss of the value of the dollar. Hell, that's already occurred. When you've lost 98% of something, for practical purposes, it's a dead letter issue. It's gone. All you people are discussing today is the loss of the last 2 cents. That's all Ben Bernanke is presiding over, the destruction of the last 2 cents. We've already destroyed 98% of the dollar's purchasing power over the last 75 years. Now, remember this, where will you be then? Well, in nominal dollars, your house is worth $600,000, so it looks like you're still ahead, right? Well, you're wrong. In order for you to have the $500,000 in buying power that you had in the year 2000, you'd have to have had $1,742,000 at the end of 2011. Your $600,000 in 2011 dollars is worth only $172,166 in year 2000 dollars. Now watch this. You paid $500,000 in 2000, but at the end of 2011, your purchasing power has dropped to $172,000. Boys and girls, you've lost over 60% of the value of your purchasing power in your housing investment. And you people in America, honest to God, believe that when you invest in a house, you're making a profit. And in nominal terms, you are. And that's the deception. In nominal terms, you're actually making a profit. In real terms, you're losing your ass. That's the bottom line. And it's worse than that. I'll show you that here in a second. Now let's throw in 12 years worth of maintenance to keep up your value of your home and pile on 12 years of interest on a jumbo mortgage as well as real estate taxes, and you've lost your shirt. Now so much for the big ATM trimmed with shrubs and shutters that we used to call the place where we live. Now this is how inflation will destroy everything you have worked for and how it will destroy the U.S. economy. The Federal Reserve must be terminated, and with the exception of Ron Paul, all incumbents must be voted out of office. Otherwise, these two examples tell you exactly where you're headed, and that is poverty. All right, this guy, what he's really trying to do here is to get you to vote one way or the other. And he's got a good point there. Ron Paul is the only non-communist that was running for president. All the rest of them are promoting the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now, this income tax, for instance, is the second plank. The fifth plank is the Federal Reserve Bank. The 10th plank is public school. First plank calls for the abolition of all right to property. Well, listen, we're already practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Americans are all practicing communists. We've been doing that hell now for 60 years. I was trained. I was taught to be a communist. I practiced communism until I was 37. And that's paper money. That's what paper money is all about. It's a communist program. And it has always led the people that practiced it into poverty. Just take a look at the Chinese and take a look at the Russians. They practiced it for many years, and while they were practicing it, they were just dirt poor. When they gave it up and started practicing free enterprise capitalism, their economies just took off. It was like night and day. Now, we Americans have given up free enterprise capitalism, and now what we're practicing is pure unadulterated communism, and we're going down the tubes. Just like the Russians did. And we're headed in the same direction the Russians were. And their economy collapsed in 1989, and their empire collapsed right along with them. Now, the Russians are still there, and the Poles are still there. All the people are still in place, right where they were. But they've got a different political regime today than they had then. And there was a massive transfer of wealth. A massive transfer of the who owns what occurred from 1989 to about 1999 in Russia. And that's what's coming to America. That's what's coming to Canada and Australia and New Zealand. In fact, it's coming to the whole world. When America goes down, all the rest of you go down with us. And there's going to be a massive transfer of wealth. Massive transfer. And I want to be on the receiving end of that massive transfer of wealth. And you can too. You need to position yourself. You know, there's some things you need to do. When you have a growth economy, you position yourself in stocks and bonds. When you have a bear market, you position yourself in commodities. Just that simple. No big mystery about it. But now, your political leaders have you people all invested in paper. Right, so when the collapse comes, like it did in 2000, I remember when the stock market collapsed in 2000. All of you people out there in radio land invested in stocks, bonds, and commercial paper took a $7 trillion hit. All right, you're in the process of taking another $7 trillion hit. It's in housing. You got $20 trillion worth of housing value. It was about 20, I think it peaked out around $21.5 trillion, as I recall, last number I saw. All right. Now, the 21 is going down by 40%. I'll say 21 times 0.40. What is that? It's 8.4. So you're going to take an $8.4 trillion hit in this next round. You lost $7 trillion in 2000. You're going to lose $8 trillion in 2011. By the time we hit this bottom, should be around 2011, they're picturing. Now, we have this massive monetary policy. They're inflating the currency right now. Ben Bernanke is putting money into circulation at the rate of 18% a year. So, when this thing hits 2012, you're going to have many more dollars in circulation. I don't know how many, because we haven't gotten there yet. But we'll look back on this, and I'll bet you that it'll be more than that. I'll bet you it'll be more than that. And hyperinflation is where, like Zimbabwe, they have, it's over 100,000% inflation per year. A guy was in class this week, and he brought me a $10 million Zimbabwe note. I always wanted to hold $10 million in my hand, and I had one. $10 million. Now get this. In 1980, the Zimbabwe dollar was worth the same amount as the U.S. dollar. But in 28 years, it has gone from par value in 1980 to, God knows, I don't know. The last time I saw a gallon of gas was $217,000. A gallon of gas, $217,000. And so what happens, there's just a total disconnect between real value and the prices that you pay. And the stores are all empty. See, the people, when they get their money, they run out and spend it as rapidly as possible on anything in sight because it's depreciating so fast. You need to unload this stuff today. I mean, you know, you get your paycheck today, you rush out and you spend it on whatever you can get. And there's great shortages. There's no gasoline available anywhere. It's all black market gas, and you pay, and they won't even take the Zimbabwe dollars. The people that have the real goods and services that you want, they don't even trade them for Zimbabwe dollars. You got to have hard currency. And these people, you know, in Zimbabwe, they don't have any hard currency. They've got Zimbabwe dollars. That's what they get paid in. And so they've been reduced to poverty is what the bottom line is. And that's where we're headed here in the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Western Europe. All of us Israelites are all going into mass poverty. We brought it on ourselves. We wanted unjust weights and balances. We wanted paper money. We wanted to cut a fat hog in the back. God, we love it. We've just been mesmerized by more and more dollars. And by God, they're giving us more and more dollars. Ben Bernanke is just putting money out there into circulation as fast as he can. You people want money, Ben's going to deliver. You're going to love it. But the dollars that you're getting aren't going to buy very much. And you people on Social Security are going to be the first ones to die. First ones to die. See, you people are all locked into this fixed income. Fixed income. So while inflation has been going up at a real rate of 9% a year, the price of the ice cream cones is going up. The amount of money that you're receiving is going up also, but it goes up at 3.8%. That's what you got last year. Compared to 9%, and so the real effect is you took a 5% cut in real purchasing power last year. And every year that goes by, your government scalps you by 5%, and you people love it. And you call it the third rail of politics. And anybody that messes with Social Security is messing with political suicide. Isn't that right? Okay. Get out there and vote, would you? We need more. We need more Hillarys and Barack's and Johns, don't we? Now, I'm not here to tell you how to vote. I'll leave that to Bob Chapman. He can tell you how to vote because I really don't care. It's irrelevant to me as to who wins the White House in 2008. Because at the end of the election process, when it's all said and done, do you think that they're going to abolish the Federal Reserve, abolish the income tax, public school? I don't believe it for a minute. All of these people are practicing communists, and they're all committed to the continuation of the Communist Manifesto. So I need to take a look at that and say, wait a minute, what's little Georgie Gordon going to do to protect his purchasing power, to protect his property and his business position? Boy, I'll tell you, it's something a lot different than those 10 pledges to the Communist Manifesto. I'm going to practice the 10 Commandments. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to practice the 10 Commandments, and I ain't going to church either. And the reason I'm going to practice the 10 Commandments is because that's where the money is. The money is in the 10 Commandments and property. It is not in the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto and income. There's no money in income. I tested that one a long time ago. All right, now, I'm going to run you through a little drill here and give you an example as to what happens when we go into paper money. See, here in America, we've already been through this. Hell, we've been through it twice. We went through a monetary inflation that destroyed our economy and produced a 90% loss of all of the real wealth of the colonists in 1783. So from 1692 to 1792, in that 100-year period, we tested paper money in this country. Every one of the 13 colonies tested paper money, and they all lost their shirts. 90% was the average loss. Now, when it was all said and done, our founding fathers learned their lessons. Roger Sherman wrote up the 17 words for Article 1, Section 10, and he promoted it, and the Continental Congress adopted Article 1, Section 10 that says that no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. We went back to gold and silver coin. From 1787 to 1913, we Americans became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world, politically, economically, and militarily. I mean, we were at the top of the peak in 1913. Then Paul Warburg came over here in 1907, and he said he was over here at the behest of the Bank of England and the Rothschilds of Europe, and he said, what you Americans need, what you Americans want, is a central bank like all the nations of Europe. Reminded me of Hillary the other day. I was watching her campaigning. She says, so is what the people of Pennsylvania want are jobs, 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 and more jobs. She had four jobs in there. George Bush said what Americans want was jobs, jobs, jobs. Hillary outdid him by one more jobs. Like you people want to be bond servants. Do you know what an employee is? In biblical terms, an employee is a bond servant. Bond servant. Now, what in the hell Americans want to be bond servants for is beyond me. But our politicians now come right out and prat it in front of your very eyeballs. And they say, what you want is bond servitude! Vote for me! Well, okay. I want you to take a look here the next time you come to class here, some of you people. These Gordon ears do not have any holes in them. Bond servants have holes in their ears. I'm not a bond servant. I'm a common law free man. And a common law free man practices the Ten Commandments, and that's why he's free. And that's why in the Bible it's called the perfect law of liberty. You want liberty, it comes from the Ten Commandments. You want bond servitude, go practice communism. What you need is another credit card. Only this time, get a gold card. God, I love that ad. Get the Citicorp gold card. You know, like we've taken total leave of our senses. No, this card is made out of plastic. Just look at it. Bend it. You know, stick it in your mouth, chew on it a little bit. It's plastic. That's not gold. For most of you listening to my mouth, listening to my words right now, you have never had gold in your hands. You don't know what the hell it is. Most of you. You wouldn't know what the hell to do with it. Or how to use it, how to spend it, what it's worth, or where to trade it. Well, back in 1690, Massachusetts issued 7,000 pounds of printed bills of equal value with money. In May of 1691, they issued 30,000 pounds of printed bills. In July of 1692, they made all of these bills of public credit current with this province and all payments equivalent to money, excepting specialties and contracts made before the publication of this new law. And as a result, almost immediately all the coin then in Massachusetts was exported to England, and new stock followed as fast as it came in from abroad. Trade and commerce declined, and hard times came upon the people. All right, boys and girls, this is what's coming. as a result of the monetary policies of the Federal Reserve. Almost immediately, all of the coin, all of the money in the United States of America will become valueless. It will depreciate in front of your eyeballs. And then new stock will follow as fast as Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve can print it up. And trade and commerce will decline, and hard times will come upon the people. Hey kids, I'm not a prophet. I'm just telling you from history. That's what happened when we tested it in 16, 90, and 91 and 92. It didn't work then. It didn't work in 1783. It didn't work from 1913 to 33. And I don't think it's going to work any better this time. But if you think it will, get out there and give it a go. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. All right, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or the publications that we endorse will reciprocate. Now, keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the richest nation on earth. It's inspired now by the comments of a young woman that was on the Lehrer News Hour last week, and she said that America is the richest nation on earth, and that it was a crying shame that we Americans don't have health care insurance. And she said that it was the right of every American to have health care insurance. And I commented the last program, I said, I didn't know that. Hell, if I'm entitled to health insurance, am I not entitled to an automobile, carpet, television? I mean, don't you think the government ought to furnish me with all of these things as a matter of right? All right, now, we've already been through this monetary scheme a couple, three times in the past. We didn't learn anything in the 1690s to 1752 when Adam Smith wrote his treatise. We didn't learn anything from 1752 or 1756, I guess it was, until 1783. We didn't learn from that. But our founding fathers did, I mean, when I say we didn't learn anything, that's you and I today. We didn't learn anything from the experience of our founding fathers from 1756 to 1783. But our founding fathers did. They learned from that experience, and they said, hell, we're not going to go through this again. And so they went back to gold and silver coin. And we did that until 1913. Now, you and I today went to public school. We didn't learn anything from that experience. And so they came to us, you know, in 1913, we bought into this Federal Reserve System bank and paper money again. And here we are in 2008, nearly 100 years later. And I don't think that the average Joe Sixpack America has learned anything from that experience. And I'm not here to save every fool from his folly. I'm a reporter. My job is to give you facts and figures. Let you figure out for yourself what you want to do. My concern in life is I think people ought to have the other side of the story. I think you ought to see both sides of the coin before you make your purchase. You know, I'm an old-timey coin collector, and you know, if I walked into a coin store and I'm looking at this coin, and, my God, that's really a good-looking coin. Maybe it's a VF20, you know, and I say, well, let me look at the coin, and the guy says, no, you can't look at the coin. What you see is what you get. Buy. That's a hell of a nice coin. It's VF20. I say, well, it looks like a VF20. What's the reverse side look like? What condition is the other side of the coin? Oh, the other side of the coin went through a meat grinder. It's all beat up. Well, then what's the overall value of the coin? Well, it's just exactly what the quality of the coin is on the beat up side. So, I don't think that people here in America and in Canada and Australia, New Zealand, Western Europe, I don't think we're getting the straight skinny from our politicians, our preachers, our bankers, and our teachers and our universities and colleges and so on. I don't think they're telling us the whole story. I think we're only getting one side of the coin. So I thought, well, let's take a look at the other side. So let me show you what happens when you buy a house. It's in my chapter 37, Private Business in our Business School. Now, I remember Bob Chapman said, you buy a house in the year 2000, and you sell it in the year 2011, the end of 2011. You've had it for 12 years. You're going to take a bath. It's worse than that. Americans, honest to God, believe that you're making a profit. When you buy a house for $50,000, pay $5,000 down, make 360 payments at $300 a month, they, honest to God, believe they're making a profit off of it. And maybe you people in Australia believe the same thing. Now, in America, I've said this many times, Americans can't count. They go to public school. When they come out of public school, they can't count. They do arithmetic, they do math, and many of them are engineers, and they get jobs, and they live their lives. But these people live poor. They're in debt. Now, if you were making a profit, why would you be in debt? Everybody that is carrying debt is unprofitable. Well, think about it. If you were making a profit, by definition, is more than you started with. I mean, if you start with $1,000, you invest it. You make a profit of $1,000, now you got $2,000. Well, what if you invest $1,000, and you lose the $1,000, and on top of that, now you owe $1,000? Is that a profit? Well, in the minds of Americans, it is. And in the minds of this young woman who said that America is the richest nation on earth, and I pointed out to you here just previous to this program here today that Americans are in debt. When you take a look at the balance sheet of the United States of America, we've got a minus $143 trillion. Now, it's true, we've got some assets. Yeah, the last time I saw, if you took all of the assets of America, tallied them all up, put them on the market for sale, we think they might be worth as much as $90 trillion. We Americans owe $143 trillion against $90 trillion. Now, I got news for you. Do you know what would happen if you put your $90 trillion worth of assets on the market all at the same time to liquidate for the purposes of paying off your debt? First of all, in America, we couldn't pay it off if we sold everything. I mean, if you sold every house If you that's $21 trillion. If you sold every business in America and every farm, if you sold all of the iron and steel and all of the businesses and all of the raw materials and the whole thing, maybe you could get $90 trillion. Well, here's what happens when you put it all on the market at the same time. It depreciates the price of the asset. The thing that makes your house worth $500,000 in your community is that there are 100 houses in your community and 3 of them are up for sale. 97 of them aren't on the market. There are 6 buyers out there who want to buy these 3 houses. And because there are 6 buyers who want to buy the 3 houses, the price goes up, maintains itself. But the minute that you put 7 houses on the market, the prices go down. Now, look what's happening in America. We're putting thousands of houses on the market. There's so many houses on the market, there's a 10-month supply of houses on the market, and there aren't buyers for them. That's why your prices are declining. It's what we call supply and demand. Now, let me show you what happens here. Let's suppose that you're an average Joe Sixpack. Let me show you what happens to your wages over here. The Department of Labor keeps a record of all income groups and social strata. In Hartford, Connecticut, a few years back, in a neighborhood that averaged $100,000 a year, annual net income, the Labor Department reports the following. The average family in this neighborhood in Hartford, Connecticut, making $100,000 a year, is in the top 5% of income earners. Top 5%. Now, if you're a truck driver, you're not making $100,000 a year, you know. If you're a factory worker at $17.50 an hour, you ain't making. Let's take $17.58 times 2,000. You're making $35,000 a year as a factory worker making average wages. $35,000 a year. So, you know, if you're making $100,000 a year, you got to be a professional. This family is made up of college-educated professionals, such as doctors, dentists, lawyers, insurance brokers, and real estate brokers. On average, they live in a $237,000 house. They drive at least one $40,000 car, although they own and maintain, on average, 3 cars. Their expenses, on average, are as follows. Their income taxes, state, federal, and city, 20% state, 3%, 20% federal, 3% state, and 1% city, equals 24% of their $100,000. Property taxes are $3,000 a year, 3%. House payments are $1,711 a month with interest, that's 20%. Utilities, telephone, gas, water, and electric is 3%. Insurance, life, health, fire, auto, and home, 6%. Entertainment, including eating out, 5%. Groceries in an upscale neighborhood, 7%. Interest payments on credit cards, auto, and other finance charges, excluding the interest on the mortgage, which has already been counted, is 15%. That's a total of 83%. So their net after-tax disposable mad money income is $17,000. 17 grand. Not bad. That's the American dream. They live in the suburbs, and he's got a job, and he's living in a house, and he's doing his thing. He has 17,000 bucks a year left over. Now, in the books of Leviticus, Exodus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, they mandate a lifestyle somewhat different but parallel to the American dream. Here's what it is. This is the way I live. Tithes and holy day offerings take 15%. That's less than the 24% that you're paying in income tax. Property taxes on 240 acres are $600 a year. That's 1.5%. My house payment is zero. I'm free and clear. Car payments are zero. I'm free and clear. And groceries for subsistence farmers are zero. We produce our own. My utilities, though, are $800 a month. That's $9,600 a year. The telephone, electric, gasoline, and propane cost me 24% of my income. Interest payments are zero. We don't practice interest and usury. Entertainment, Sabbath, and holy day tithe is 10%. That's our second tithe. And insurance is zero. We don't practice limited liability. Now, in the country, out here in the countryside, our fixed expenses, that is telephone, electric, water, gas, and property taxes are somewhat higher than my city cousin at $9,600 versus $6,000 for my city cousin. However, a pay cash, no interest lifestyle allows me to live in a 7,000 square foot house, drive three cars, although none of them are $40,000 cars. I don't have any $40,000 cars, but I got three. And I eat better than you do in the city. And I always tell my students when I come to measure somebody's wealth, this young lady says, America is the richest nation in the world. Let me measure your wealth. How much cream do you have in your refrigerator right now? Cream. Table cream. If you're average, the answer is zero. In my refrigerator right now, in fact, I maintain 1 gallon. That's 1 gallon. 1 U.S. gallon of cream. That's cow's cream. Fresh whipping cream in my refrigerator at all times. 1 gallon. I say that's pretty good wealth. I keep 8 gallons of milk in my refrigerator. I keep at least one cow in my freezer at all times. If I ever get down less than one cow, I'm bordering on poverty. And when we get down to a half a gallon of cream, we're running a shortage. When we've got 4 gallons of milk in the refrigerator, we got to go out and conserve. I got to go out and milk another cow. So I just wanted to point that out. Out here in the country, we do live pretty well. Sometimes I'm asked by people, how do you live without income? And the answer is, I live very well. Thank you. So I eat better than my country or city cousin. For me to end up with $17,000 in disposable income, you know, like you do in the city, you real estate brokers and lawyers and doctors and all you got, in order for me to end up with $17,000, mad money, that I can spend on a princess cruise, okay, I have to make $40,500 Federal Reserve Note dollars, or it's equivalent to live in that same $100,000 lifestyle that you do in Hartford, Connecticut. So I only need 40% of what you need, practicing the Ten Commandments. You've got to have $100,000 practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And you know what? You people that are practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto do not have 8 gallons of milk in your refrigerator, a gallon of cream, or a cow in your freezer. None of you. And we would consider that as bare necessities. And that's subsistence living for us. Now, I'm going to get down to the house. I have 10 more minutes. Let me tell you about buying a house. One of the first things that I hear about home ownership is, where would I live if I don't buy a house or don't buy a home? So let's try building our own. What would happen if you built your own home? I know, it's a wild new concept. But I'm an old-timey general contractor, and I can tell you that when I sell a house for $50,000, it cost me $25,000 to build it, and I've keystoned my investment. I intend to make a $25,000 profit off of that house, and I'm the builder. So when you buy with an 8.5% fixed rate mortgage for 30 years, you're buying one house for you at retail, and then you're buying two houses for the banker at the same time. You people who are making your home payments right now with an interest rate of 8.5%, you're buying one house for you and two houses for the banker. You're buying three houses. You're buying three houses over 30 years. You're going to keep one, the banker's going to get two. Now, if that's the way you want to live, you know, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But that sounds like a drunken sailor in port to me, buying one house for you and two for the banker. Now, what would happen if you were to build your own house? And this used to be pretty common. I remember Russell Harvey, my first employer, when I ran away from home at age 13. Russell Harvey, he built his house. Oh, it's probably a 2,000-square-foot house sitting on F Street in Eureka, California. He paid $3,000. He built it himself. He hired a carpenter. And he and the carpenter built that house in 1 year for $3,000 cash. He owned it free and clear. Now, I hope you build your own for $25,000. That's one for you, and then five more for you. Because, you see, if you were to build a house every 5 or 6 years off of your savings, at the end of your 40-year productive lifespan, you'd have 6 or 7 houses. Did you know that? That's right. No matter how much money you make, you spend it all. The man who makes $100,000 a year spends it all, just the same as the man that makes $50,000 a year spends it all, just the same as the man that makes $25,000 a year spends it all, or the man that makes $12,500 a year. He spends it all. The trick to this is to always save half. You save half by cutting your living standards in half by 50%. So if you're making $20 an hour, you live like the guy that's making $10 an hour. And if you're making $50, then you live like the guy that made $25. Stop paying income tax, stop paying insurance, stop paying interest, practice strict liability instead of insurance, don't pay usury and interest, pay your tithes, stop paying income tax, stop paying Social Security. In less than 3 years, you'll have the cash to build your own house. In 36 months, now let me tell you what this is again. If you would stop paying this insurance, you know, house payments, you need to stop making these house payments. Get off that crap. You're buying one house for you and two for the banker. Stop making house payments. Car payments, you need to be free and clear. Stop making car payments. Groceries for subsistence farmers is zero. Grow your own food. It's a wild new concept. Interest payments. Stop paying usury and interest. And then insurance. Stop paying insurance. The savings off of those activities right there. And in 36 months, you'll have the money to build a house. Free and clear. Which is what Russell Harvey did back in 1940. See, there was a time before people were paying income tax, Social Security. People didn't always pay for insurance. We didn't always practice usury and interest. We used to go out and buy things and pay cash. I mentioned that to you. Guy goes out and buys an automobile. He pays 14% interest on this automobile. He pays it for 36 months. He buys one car for himself and he buys one car for the bank. Now they've got these loans stretched out for 60 months. And somebody told me the other day, 84. Somebody said they had a car loan program here for 84 months. That usury and interest, boys and girls, eat you up, and eat you up geometrically. Now here's what the bottom line is. If you bought a house in 1955, and you paid $50,000 for it, in 1985 you'd sell it for $250,000. If you take off the cost of goods sold, that's $186,100. The gross profit for 30 years is $63,000. The total income per year is $2,130. Your capital gain tax is $17,000. Your adjusted net profit is $46,000. The net loss on a house is $92,000. Now listen to my words again, boys and girls. Listen up now. When you buy a house for $50,000 at 6% interest for 30 years with $300 a month payments, the net loss on that business transaction at the end of 30 years, you have just lost $92,664. And that's assuming that you don't pay any capital gain tax on that at all, exercising your one-time-in-a-lifetime option to sell your home without paying tax on it. So you bought it for $50,000, it cost you $92,000. See, you lost your $50,000 plus the $92,000. That's exactly what Bob Chapman pointed out to you when you bought your house in 2000 for $500,000 in this housing bubble. You are losing your shirt. There's no money to be made on these houses. This concept of the American dream is propaganda that you picked up in the public schools. See, when you go to public school, they teach you that sodomy is an alternative lifestyle and that you should be tolerant of sodomites, homosexuals, and other deviants. Kids, wake up here for a second. Let me show you something. That's crime. It violates the law of God. That's a criminal activity. You're learning to become criminals in the public school system. When you go to public school and they teach you to pay usury and interest on a home mortgage, and they teach you that this is the American dream, they're training you to be a criminal. That's against the law. Violates the law of God. Now, you're sitting there hooting and hollering and saying, "Why, you crazy lunatic fringe?" Okay. But boys and girls, I've got a gallon of cream in my refrigerator and you don't. Wake up. I got 8 gallons of milk in my refrigerator. You don't. I got a cow in my freezer. You don't. Hell, the average American is in hock. He's in debt. He can't pay his bills. This is why he's using his credit cards today to bridge the gap. This is why in 1945 at $1.75 you could buy 17 ice cream cones, and today you can only get 7. Hell, I ain't telling you how to live. I'm not telling you to change. I'm not telling you to give your heart to Jesus. I don't care. I'm a reporter giving you hard facts. This is the way it is. Now, if you'd like this issue of the International Forecaster, my gut reaction is Bob Chapman is a businessman. He'd like to sell you a subscription to his newsletter. It's $160 a year. I think he'll give you this newsletter. Now, I don't work for him, and I don't talk to him, and he don't pay me for doing this. I'm just suggesting that if he's a businessman, and I think he is, if he's got a brain in his head, I think he does, I think he'll send you a copy of this if you tell him, "You heard this on the radio. It was a report." This is the April 26th, 2008 issue of the International Forecaster. Chapman said, "If you read these two paragraphs and you can't wake up to this, you're got to be brain dead." Now, if you're retired right now today, you're going into insolvency very shortly. You're going to have famine. You're going to have food shortage. You're going to have rationing and ration cards. We had that back in 1945. Now, Chapman over here, he says, you need to vote these people out of office. I disagree with Chapman there, you know, with all due respect, Bob. I think voting for these clowns just encourages them. Hell, there's a better way than that. I'm not going to change Hillary Clinton. I'm not going to change Barack Obama and John McCain. The policies that America has been following are the same policies that have led us into the debacle that we're headed into. These policies aren't going to change over the next 5, 10, 20 years. And George Gordon has to live here just like you and I and everybody else. We have to make changes at our level in this game. We have to protect ourselves. I can't save you, but you could save yourself. Remember, it's the International Forecaster. Just go to their website. It's theinternationalforecaster.com. www.theinternationalforecaster.com. You're looking for the April 26th, 2008 issue. Hey, I'm about out of time here, kids. We're going to have to wrap it up here and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal that says our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.